Okay, try that again. This is an interview with Cecil Martin at RD1, Leavittsburg. His post office box 122, and this is June 8th, 1975, and it's about 5 o'clock. All right, Cecil, what railroad did you work for?
B&O Railroad.
B&O. What did you do on the B&O?
I was fireman and later on was an engineer.
When did you hire out?
I hired out on August 8th, 1928.
That's just before the Depression, wasn't it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I worked about a year and a half, and I was furloughed, and then I was furloughed till 1936, and I was called back, and I worked about a little over a year, and from December 36 into 37, about December 37, and was furloughed until, May of 39, when I was called back.
Were you a fireman during these early years?
Yes.
When did you move up to engineer?
I can't even tell you that date.
I thought everybody knew exactly when they got promoted.
When I was promoted.
That's interesting. You didn't get called to the war?
No. No, I didn't serve time in the war or in the army. And I worked here, at the forest for about a year, and then I went to Painesville, and I left Painesville in 48 after the four docks closed. When they closed there, why, we left there then and come back to Warren here, and I finished out here in Warren my time, and I run engines. Was engineer from about 44 until I quit, 66.
What was life when you first started railroading?
It was pretty rough. Your engines were pretty near all hand-fired at that time. All but your heavy freight engines, they were, majority of them, stokered. But your passenger engines and all your yard engines were hand-fired. And it was long hours, all kinds of weather, and all kinds of time. You had no, it was on call 24 hours a day as far as that went. And your conditions to eat and live at one end or the other ends of the lines, wherever your terminal was at, was pretty rough. Of course, we had Newcastle and Willard. Willard was a pretty good place. They had the B&O had a pretty good YMCA there, but at Newcastle it wasn't too good, and at Pittsburgh it wasn't too good. But it was pretty rough work at the beginning. And then later on, about 1945 or six in there, I can't tell you just exactly when they got some road diesels. And then from then on, why, they continued to do away with steam engines more and more and get more diesels.
What type of steam engines did you work on?
Well, the types anymore, I can't tell you that. We had what we call the old Malley engine. That was a four-cylinder engine. It was a regular drag engine, a freight engine. And we had several different makes and models of engines. At that, I can't tell you what the names of them were anymore.
Did they use that? I've seen that Mallee on the lake run, but did they use it out on the main line?
No, they couldn't use them on the main line. They weren't fast enough. They couldn't use them out there. It was too. They were just nothing but a drag engine, a heavy freight engine, and that's all they were. And you see, we could use them here on the lake branch, because it was up and down so much on that, you know, upgrade and down. And of course that was slow work, and that's the way we worked them. But they couldn't use them on the main line for speed. There was no speed to them.
But was the stoker part of the engine, or was it part of the coal car, or how did
No, it was, you had your stoker was part of your engine, and then there was a long auger that went from your firebox back into your coal tank, and there was the center of the coal tank was a big chute, and that auger run in that, and that coal worked down in that, and then worked forward as your auger come forward as you turn the steam on, and then it come up into a pocket right in front of the fire door, and then there was two elevators on each side that had augers in them that worked the coal up, and then the steam, your jets inside of your firebox on a firing plate, that's what blowed the coal off of the firing plate into the firebox. Well, then in later years, they got what they called a Lowry stoker. That come right up in front of the door and went right in front of the fire door. It was a lot cleaner stoker than the old duplex was.
That's interesting. I never didn't know anything about those stokers.
Yeah. Nice.
How often did you have to put coal, take coal on for?
Well, take coal on. Yeah. Well, we'd take coal, we'd have a tank at Painesville, and we'd take coal here at DeForest. Going east, that would take us to Newcastle, and then coming back, we'd do the same thing. Take coal here to go to Painesville. When it was on the main line, we never took coal, only unless we had trouble. We never took coal at Akron, but took coal at Warwick, going west and coming east too. We take coal there.
What kind of coal did they burn? Was it a hard coal? Was it dirty or clean?
I'd like to tell you what kind of coal it was. It wouldn't work. Well, it was more or less of a hard coal, yes. Yes.
I don't know. Maybe you ought to tell us. That might be good material.
We shipped coal to Painesville, of course, for the lake trade. And that coal would be just as shiny, just shine like a dollar. Mm-hmm. And it would be nut coal. And I often said that I wished I could get that on a locomotive. I believe you could burn it right down to the rail. We run out of coal up there one time, and they went down to the harbor and they took a couple cars of that, and they brought it up and they run it through the tipple and put it on the engine, and they die. Now, why, what kind of coal it was, or what they used, I thought when they shipped this across to Canada, it was a steam coal. But it just put the fire out. The fire, it wouldn't burn. And they had them dead all the way along the road here. They had three men between here and Painesville, and, well, just it was dead. That's all. They had nothing there. And then we had, during a coal strike here one time, we got coal from Indiana, Illinois, I guess, I don't know. And boy, that stuff, when it you burn it, it made steam. But after an hour or so, your fire, you had clinkers, just a solid bed of iron on your grates. She just clinkered down that bad. But it made steam while you was working, you know, for a while, but that's the way. Then you'd have to clean your fire and start all over again.
How did you get the clinkers out of them?
Well, you just have to tip your grates up and take the clinker hook and break them down into the ash pit. That's the only way you could get them out.
Now, on this ash pen, did they dump that when they, how often did they?
Well, we used to leave it open and leave it go along the road till they'd get the burning ties, and then the section men would raise the dickens, and then they'd put out an order to see that all, inspect all ash pens and see they were closed before you left your terminal. And of course, if you had good coal, was very little ash in it, why, it would go from Painesville to Newcastle, or from Newcastle to Willard, without any trouble in an ash, with an ash pan. And of course, in the winter time, we used to try and leave them open, get away with it, because they would freeze up. And if you got into trouble with your fire and had to knock your fire out or do something with it, then your ash pan was full, and you couldn't get it froze up, and you couldn't get it out. And if you left your fire up against your grates, then you'd burn your grates out.
How large was one of those, you know, on a steam engine, how large a firebox, I mean, can you give me any idea? I have no idea. How large a firebox?
Well, I imagine they were about 10 foot wide and about 12, 14 feet long. They had, three sets of grates, I have no idea anymore, I think there was four sections hooked onto one lever, that would be, four, I think about eight, I think there was eight grates in each line, the three lines.
Really big, you know, you don't have any idea of the size of these things, really, I don't suppose, sometimes.
I don't have the tonnage, I can't tell you the tonnage. Now, these old Malleys that we had was, a couple of them here, about 111 foot long. Okay. Yeah, they were about that big, of course, according to the size of the tank, made a difference.
Were these steam engines dirty to work?
Oh, yes. Of course, we had what they call squirt hose. The water come right out of the boiler. It was hot, and of course we kept the deck and around the side washed down, and then we washed to wet the coal down to keep the dust as much as you could. But you had lots of cinders.
Mm-hmm. But you could put wet coal on the fire.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. You could wet it right down, or it would run, the water would run out of it, but you could still blow it into firebox and make steam. Oh, yeah.
They wouldn't think the coal would burn if it was wet.
Well, you wouldn't think so, but it did.
Who all do you work with out there on the road?
Oh. I worked with a man by the name of, from Painesville, by the name of Todd Lockwood. Well, I worked some with McManus and some with John Tittler. Occasionally when I fired up there. And of course when I come here, then the fireman, this man Moore, like I said. And I fired engines here for Gene and Frank Jacobs and Weldy Jacobs, Sam Zeller, Billy Welsh.
Do you ever know this guy named Grubby that they over
here? Yeah, Clarence Grubbs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did he do on the river?
He was a brakeman.
He was a brakeman.
Yeah. He had taken promotion for conductor and then he gave up his conductor's rights and went to break in their state break. And yes, I know him well.
Did you work only freight, or did you work some passenger?
No, I just worked freight.
Uh-huh.
When I could hold a passenger job firing, I was too old. I was too young. Let's put it that way. I couldn't hold a job firing. Then when I could hold a job firing, I was too old. I was marked up like DeForest or Hazleton Yards or Painesville Yard running an engine, see. That's where I missed out on that. Of course, I didn't miss any.
Which did you prefer, the diesel or the steam engine?
The steam engine. The diesel was clean, a lot cleaner, but when they quit on you, they were done. There was no trying to fix them or anything about it. You could take a steam engine and you could watch it, and your steam gauge would start to go down, then you know there was something the matter with your fire. Well, the first thing you'd do, you'd shut your stoker off and open it, let the smoke clear up, look in the firebox, take your shovel and look in the firebox around, you could see where your fire was bad. Maybe it was piling up in one place, or you had a hole in another place in your firebox, and you had something to work on to bring it back to life. For the diesel, you have nothing. Now, they're cleaner, a lot cleaner, but they're noisier than a steam engine. Now, the steam engine was the best that I had, my part of it.
Did you have a feeling that railroading was on its way out when they went to the diesel?
No, I did not. Not no way at all. None of us had, I don't think.
So, who'd you work with out on the main line?
Well, I worked with a man by the name of D.J. Davies. I fired for him on the main line, and a man by the name of Hetty out of Newcastle. I believe them was the only two out there that I worked with. And, of course, like I said, this man, Todd, and one of the Erlines, Lockwood, and them fellows from Painesville, fired mm-hmm. for them.
You never did do that Holloway run?
No. No, I stayed off of that.
Why?
I wanted no part of it. That was fog down there so bad, and I had all the fog I wanted from Youngstown to Newcastle without going to Holloway in that fog.
That was single track down there, though.
That's right. That's right, yes. Mm-hmm.
I wondered why some of the men didn't seem to mind that run down there, and then some of them really didn't like it.
It was just like every place else. Them fellas that run down there, they never worked any place else. Now, just like with myself and some more of these fellows on this Slate branch, we done the most of ours out of Painesville to Newcastle. Well, that's the way them fellows did. They run it from Lorain to Holloway. That was their division. They stayed it. They fired on it. They knowed where they were at. Of course, we had a percentage on the Lorain jobs, but, I never took them. I never wanted them.
You never worked for it?
No, I never worked for it.
Well, that Holloway run then ran from Lorain to Holloway?
That's right, yes. Right. Yeah. And then we have jobs out of Lorain to Newcastle. Mm-hmm. We have percentage on them because I'm there.
How often did you make a trip? Were you in the pool or what?
Well, yeah, you was in the pool. Sometimes 10 hours, sometimes you'd be in your own home terminal 12 hours before you'd make a turn or get called, and then you'd get into Newcastle, you'd be there around anywhere from 8 to 10 hours before they'd call you to go back to Painesville. That was one thing we didn't do there out of Painesville too much was deadhead, because we never had too many crews in the Lake Branch to deadhead them, you know what I mean. And out of Newcastle, on the main line, they'd go to Willard and they'd lay there for, 12, 14 hours. Maybe they'd have 8 or 10 crews in there at one time and nothing coming east. then they did hit a 4 or 5 up. We never had that many crews out of the... Oh, occasionally they did hit a crew out of Newcastle to Painesville, but not very often.
How did your pay run on the railroad? By the number of trips you made, or...?
No, by the hour, by the day, by the 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have time and a half for overtime or anything?
Oh, yeah, we had time and a half for overtime, but we didn't have no paid holidays or no...
You got a schedule there, pay?
I've got one. Well, all right, this is good enough. This is, January 1949. I've got a time book since that, or before that. But there's our paychecks, and that was 2 weeks.
Date here. I see that you ran here, you had 4 days in a row, and then you were off a day.
Yeah, it's a loss, like I lost a day there.
Did you ever miss a call?
Oh, yeah, lots of them.
Did you miss them on purpose, or...?
No, they were mostly accidental.
Did they ever say anything to you?
No.
I see here you got your miles written in.
Yes.
And overtime you got checked off. How many hours were you allowed to run?
16 hours.
16. Did they ever have to come and deadhead?
Oh, yeah, they come and relieve you.
This is Lindsay, your conductor.
No, Bob Lindsay was, I was firing then, wasn't I?
You were firing, yeah.
Yeah, Bob Lindsay was the engineer.
Oh, he was the engineer.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What do you call that thing on the front? That book?
Oh, this is Sadler's Railroad Time Book for the use of engineers and firemen.
What was the exam like that you had to take to become an engineer?
Well, there's another one I'd like to answer you through, and I can't do it.
I ran across an old exam my father-in-law took on the mechanics of an engine.
Oh.
It was way back about 1919 or something. But did you have to take an exam or anything when you became a fireman?
Yes. You had to take an examination on machinery. That was the locomotive parts. What you would do if you broke a valve, how you'd set the valve on the other side, and different things on the boilers, on your air compressors, and different stuff that would go wrong with an engine. That you could block a valve and fix it on the road. That was your first one. Well, then the second one, you come along with the air brakes. And that was where you had to tell them from the time it went into your compressors and into your tanks until it was released by the air brake. Well, one fellow, all right.
Go ahead. I want some human interest.
Well,
here.
One fellow said it went when it went on, and it went when it went off, and that's all there was to it. You pulled your brake on, and you got an exhaust when you put your brakes on. Then when you released them, you kicked it over in full release, and you got the same thing when it went off. But that was your worst examination, and was your air brakes, because you had to trace the air, like I said, from the compressor, when it went into the compressor, until it was released out of the train line. But there was lots and lots of stuff in that you had to learn. Well, then your last examination was your road and rule. That was the working rules of the company. And then the road rule was to learn the where the switches and your facing point and trailing point switches were your sidings and all your number of your tracks in the yards. That wasn't too bad, but the air brake was the worst.
And did you have to take another exam when you went on to diesel, or
no?
Anything similar?
No, that was one thing that I think the company done wrong, but after all, I'm glad they didn't, because they did do what they done. When they got these diesels, they had a man ride with you on the road. When they got them in the yard, they said, there's the throttle, there's the brake, it's yours. And that was it. We had a few men around that had been to diesel schools, and they'd tell you how, if you got stopped, they'd help you or tell you how maybe you could get it started, and that was it. But we never had no examination or no instructions of any kind how to run them.
Okay, now when you were a fireman, now when you became an engineer, now what did you run the engine some as a training period, or how did you become an engineer?
Oh yeah, all these engineers let the firemen run the engine. Some of them would say you started in the morning at 7 o'clock. Well, maybe around 10, 9:30 or 8, 9:30 along there, he'd eat his lunch. Well, he'd go over and he'd do the firing, and you'd run the engine. Well, then maybe in the afternoon, why, after you come out from dinner, why, he'd say, well, run her a while. Well, you'd run her, and that's the way, that was the only experience we got, the only training we got of running an engine.
Coming back to firemen, now, after you didn't have to put the coal on the fire anymore, and you had the stokers, like that, what did the fireman do?
Run the stoker.
The stoker wasn't an automatic thing.
It was an automatic to the point of power, but you had to turn it on and off.
So you didn't get too much coal
in? Yeah, too much in or not enough in, see? Yeah, oh yes. You had plenty of work to do. There was no getting around that.
I thought maybe you just sat up in the window and looked out the other side.
No. No.
Were you ever involved in any accidents on the road?
Never but one.
What happened on that one?
I had up a rear end. There was a man stopped just out of Chardon one day, and it was bad. I was going into Chardon. I had about six cars or seven cars, and they had no flag out.
Mm.
And he was sitting right on a curve. And boy, I hit him.
Did you have time to hit the air?
I had time to get nothing. And I put the caboose right up on a coal track, or a coal car. Boy, there she sat. I was thinking of that before you come here. I should have hunted it up then, I guess.
Well, you mean you put it up, put his caboose
oh, yeah,
up on his coal car, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my word. Did you ever ride in any of the cabooses?
Oh, yes.
What was the food like back there?
The food? Well, you had no food unless the flagman and the conductor would share theirs with you.
Hmm.
And
on this accident, I see you put that thing right off the trucks or whatever
yeah.
you call those things, right up on the...
Yeah, right up on the coal car.
Yeah. Did anybody get hurt?
No.
You're lucky.
No. The flagman and the conductor was in the caboose, and I don't know when they seen it. I guess about the time I seen it, but they just took off like two big birds, one out of each side, right out into the ditch. And my fireman and I were on the engine, and we both tried to get out the same door, and we were too big to fit the back door. But he did get out and jump, but I stayed. I didn't go. Tom Smith. Well, he was the fireman.
What did the company say about the accident?
Oh, we had they had an investigation. If I recall right, the conductor and the brakeman got the flagman got a year out of it. They were off about a year before they got back to work.
They suspended them.
Yeah.
Company ever fire anybody?
Well, yes and no. That's a hard way to answer, but they did at times, and then a lot of them, they did a lot of different.
They mostly worked through suspensions, didn't they?
They never, the B&O never suspended you, unless it's something like that, you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they would give you a reprimand, what they call a reprimand. And they used to have the story out that if you got four or five reprimands, then they give you another reprimand for getting that many. And then they went against your record if anything happened. If you really did have a bad one, you know, like that went against your record. But I don't know if anybody was ever let go on account of that. Of course, now the different railroads have different things. Now today, of course, this C&O, they'll give you time. Mm-hmm. And I think the Erie in Pennsylvania always did give them 90 days or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you ever have any interesting experiences out there on the road with the fellows?
No.
Most of them must have been good.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want them on tape.
Oh, I don't know. I got some pretty good ones out of Jerry Bonetti the other day.
Oh, boy, I'll bet you did. I'll bet you did. Yes, sir.
I'm going to go back up and see him again. Huh? When I left, he was doubling over with laughter, so it must have been something awfully good.
I'll bet you got some good ones out of Jerry. Did you talk to Clarence Grubbs?
No, I haven't been over there yet.
Well, now he has some books there that you might be interested in as far as engines are concerned. Now, there's two of them that I know of, and he has the one set. And he has a set of engines, and he has a book of the B&O from the beginning, right up till the present day, well, pretty near to the present day. How it started and how they got through Ohio here, or through Pennsylvania, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
How the B&O got into Pennsylvania and come across there, I've read the book, but I just don't remember much of how it all was in there.
Well, coming back to the engines, how did you make the engine go? I mean, how it controlled the speed?
Well, he had the throttle. It was just the same as you got on an automobile with the accelerator. The only thing is, he worked the throttle by hand, and when you opened the throttle a little at a time, and that left the steam into your cylinders. Through pipes into your cylinders, And just you started out just with enough to get it started, and then you'd give it more steam as you went along, and then of course you had your valves, you'd raise them up just like you'd shift gears in an automobile, till you'd get your lever, your Johnson bar as they called them. You'd get them up far enough that your engine would be running smooth, and when you got it that way, that's all you could do then. But then just give it a little more steam, and you'd get your speed or the speed you wanted.
Now you worked on that Painesville run. Did you ever have a train get going too fast coming down over
the park? No, never did. And I don't think to the best of my knowledge, as long as I know of it, I don't think anybody ever had any getaway.
Did you know Bernard Kelly? Let's see. Did he go under another name, Kelly? Mike Kelly.
Oh, Mike!
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, but that name I didn't know. Yeah, Mike come here one winter and worked here in the mill. Oh, one winter, a couple of months, I guess, maybe. I fired for him here in the mill for a while at night.
He's retired. He lives in South Carolina now.
Yeah.
So when you worked over here in the yard, what did you do?
We switched cars in and out of the mill, classified cars for the different railroads, and then for the road jobs that come in here, the outbound that would be going east or going west. We classify that and then classify the inbound and the outbound out of the mill. Spot cars around on different loading tracks for them.
Do you have any arguments with the inspectors?
No, I never. Were you what kind of inspector?
I don't know.
Car inspector. No, you had no argument with a car inspector. No.
His word was law.
That's right. That's right. You didn't argue with a car inspector at all. Because when they said that car is not fit to run, it didn't run. Because that was up to him then. He had an answer for it. You had nothing to do with it. And after all, I never was much of anybody to argue with outside of a yard master. I'd argue with them till I was blue in the face, but outside of that, nobody else I ever argued with. Conductor or that brakeman or anybody, I never argued with any of them. Because they had their job to do and their own business, and that's the way I expected mine to be. Expect anybody to come up and tell me how to run an engine, which they did, but it didn't make any difference.
Who was yard master over here when you were working over here at DeForest?
Oh boy.
Don Childs, where did he work?
Don Childs was over here, and I worked under Tack Richards over here, and I worked under a man by the name of Crawford.
What did the yardmaster do?
Well, he was the boss. He laid out the work for you, and you done it. He was to see that you done it. And what, Jack Six was over here as a yardmaster at one time, and what was the big fella's name from the other fella from Akron? Oh, I can't think of his name. Oh, yeah.
You ever know, Fetzer. George Fetzer?
Yeah, George Fetzer. Fetzer.
Fetzer.
We're getting Fetzer mixed up here. Yeah, George was here at that time, and he was superintendent over here on the old Akron division at one time. Assistant Chester Williams, he was here at one time years ago. Of course, he was superintendent here on the Akron division for a while.
What did the superintendent do?
Well, he was the overseer of the Akron division. He was the boss. He put out the orders, and the yard masters, they put them out. Of course, the buck had to stop someplace. And It stopped at the engine crew. That's where it stopped. Yeah. They all put out their orders to everybody below them, and that was it.
Did you ever get any orders that you thought were unreasonable?
You mean working orders?
Uh-huh.
No.
What?
There was some of them was questionable, but then after all, the train orders, why, yes, you'd get them. Of course, that was in the movement of your train, understand? That wasn't... That had nothing to do with the work, only the moving of the trains. They were the dispatchers, they made mistakes just like anybody else, and they'd get maybe put a word in shouldn't have been in, and that would mix up the whole order. But outside of that, why, they were a pretty good outfit at that time to work for.
If you could change anything on the railroad, and as you look back, what would you have changed?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
You're pretty happy with it the way it was?
The way it was. And you talk about the companies, they had to be the men, they had to have a lot of confidence in the men because you made your own time. There was no clock to punch, nor nobody questioned your time. You made out your time slip and you turned it in, and it went into the timekeeper, and it went from the timekeeper at Akron to Baltimore, and you was paid the same thing as you turned your time in. There was no clock, there was occasionally maybe there'd be a time slip that would be questioned, but then very, very seldom. So you know they had to. Well,
do you ever know any of the fellows that hedged a little bit on their time?
Oh no, not exactly. We all did a few minutes here and there, and of course they did. The company they hedged on the pay too. If it was what was it less than 2 cents, they didn't pay you, and if it was over 3 cents, they paid you. So what?
Mm-hmm.
But I think more or less at some time or other, we maybe all did edge a little on our time here and there, a few minutes. Yeah.
Let me turn this tape over. Let me ask you about this braking business of the train. You didn't run passengers, so I can't ask you if you took the dishes off the tables in the dining cars, but...
No, but I've shook up a few dishes in a caboose.
Oh, you have?
Far lengths from the engine, yes. Yes, sir.
What did they have to say to you?
Oh, they had something you wouldn't want on record. That's for sure.
Were the railroaders English about as bad as... was the English about as bad as sailors' English?
Oh, no, not quite, no. No, no. It was all, as Gene said, it was all in the handling. Some could and some couldn't. You couldn't take up, a lot of them would, as coming into the fours, like from Painesville, coming out the flat line there, and they would come in there and have her down to just a creep, and then they'd use the engine brake. Well, when you use your engine brake, that was just your engine brake. That had nothing to do with these 75 or 100 empty cars behind your engine, you understand? All right, when that foot of slack would run in on about 8 inches of slack on every car, and you've got 100 cars, you was getting a lot of bump there until you come to the caboose. And when you come to the caboose, you really got to shake it up. And that's when the dishes and the stove lids would fly. Yeah. That was quite a thing to learn.
Now, you had air that was connected to all of the cars, right?
Yeah.
And so when you braked, you really, were supposed to brake on all of the cars?
That's right. You were supposed to make a reduction of about 10 pounds, and then weight that 10 pound would release out of your cylinders and that. You see, it wasn't the air, putting the air on, that caused the brakes to grit. It was the releasing of the air that caused your brakes to go together. Then later on, like I said, when it was a whoosh, when it went on and a whoosh, when it went off, it was the same way as when you released them. Then you would wait and you could feel it. You could feel your cars, you could feel your slack tightening up, and you couldn't dare to release it right away. You couldn't release it. And then when you come to a stop, why then you draw 10 or 15 more pounds off, and that sets your brakes all up tight. That would be the, you know, your stopping. Of course, then when you was on the road and you wanted a little air, you'd use a little air to stretch the train, but then you'd have to have enough speed and not enough brake to, when you released it, so that your engine could pick up speed enough to get away from the cars and all.
Why would you want the train stretched up?
Well, there are two advantages on different places to stop. If you was on a level and stretch your train out, it would be an advantage. Or on downgrade a little bit, it would be on an advantage to a start. Now, if you was on an upgrade, you would try and bunch your cars. So you'd have the slack all in against them. When you started out, then your train would come right apart right easy. You'd have your slack out there, have your slack in.
Did you ever have very much trouble with hobos riding the trains?
No. That ended with the beginning of the 40s. Now and then you'd see a few transits riding, riding some cars, but as far as the hobos at that time, I know they were gone.
What did you do during those years you were furloughed?
Farm
during the Depression. When you went back then in the late 30s there, how was the railroad different from what it was when you first hired out?
No difference. No, it was just the same. They improved the engine some, but not too much difference. They had put stokers on a few more of them, but they still had a lot of hand-fired engines.
Did the B&O keep their equipment up?
Some of it they did. They kept up good, some of it, and some of it they didn't.
What kind of condition did they keep the engines in?
Well, their passenger engines and their fast freight engines at that time, they kept them up in good shape. But these old freight engines, these drag engines, why, they didn't do too much to them. Just kept them running, and that's about all.
Did you ever have to fix any of them when you're out on the road?
No. No, because all you had was a monkey wrench, a cold chisel, a hammer, and a shaker bar. You couldn't fix very much with that.
Did you ever have a breakdown?
Oh, yes.
What'd you do?
Oh, side rod. I had a side rod break on me one time. Stoker broke. Of course, we didn't stop for that. We had a fire in my hand with a brake, and then I fired it. That was the only thing I ever had. Never fired for anybody that really had any trouble.
And when you were hand firing, now some of those fireboxes, as you say, were, 12 feet long.
Yeah.
So, okay, now how did you get the coal to the back of that firebox? Or the front of it, however you want to figure, away from you. How did you get it back in?
Well, now, listen, Mrs., we were talking about these big engines. Your yard engines, we didn't have that big a firebox, but you say, how did you get it to the front end of the engine? That's where you had to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You take a scoop of coal and step on the thumb and open the door and stick the shovel in there. The draft of the engine would take the coal.
Oh.
Unless you of course, you had to place it, you understand what I mean? But you had no trouble getting coal as far as near that wall out from the fire door. But you fired an engine, and that was where I fell down. I was left-handed to fire, and you had to keep your side of your crown chair, your sheets, the side of your firebox. That's where you'd done your fire. You've done very little bit out in the middle. You sprinkled coal in the middle, but along the side. Well, your left-handed man could fire the left side, but when you come to your left-handed man come to fire to the right side, that was a job. Now, I've had fellas show me they could fire both ways. They'd fire left-handed and then turn right around and fill up the right side. See? But oh boy, and then you're getting one of these engines out here, the road a little rough, and that engine walking back and forth, and you standing up there trying to fire that thing by hand, that's a job. But then, the suction, the draft on that would take a shovel full of coal right out of your hand. Oh yeah, awful draft.
I just wondered about that. Well, did you carry your own lunch on the road, or did you stop?
No. Once in a while we would, and sometimes if we got delayed along the road, we would stop. Going east here, if we got stopped at Girard, we'd go over right just over across the tracks there. There was a little restaurant. And if we got down as far as Ohio Junction and was in the siding for a while, there was a mill restaurant there on the right. And going west, of course, we never come out of Newcastle till at night. We've always come out of there pretty near always at night after just around 8, 9 o'clock. And we'd get to Middlefield. Why, they kept the restaurant open there 24 hours a day. Now they kept it open, they didn't serve meals, but the town clown or the town marshal stayed in there at night. He'd go in there and then he'd make his rounds of the business places and then come back and go in there. And either going east or west, whichever way we were going, mostly into Painesville, we'd come over the hill and stop up at the siding, cut the engine off and go down, and he'd open the door and let us in. And we'd have coffee and donuts or pie or whatever happened to be there to eat, go on about our business. And of course on the main line we used to have places we could stop if we got delayed somewhere to eat, but very little. Some fellas cooked on the engine.
How can you cook on an engine?
Well, some of the fellas make some pretty good, fry some pretty good meat on an engine. You can make coffee on an engine. They'd take the scoop shovel and put the squirt hose on it. Well, that's scalding water right out of the boiler. When they'd stop like over here at DeForest where they wasn't working the engine and get a good fire in there and put their pork chops on that scoop and cook the door open and put it in the firebox. And they'd cook there in a few minutes. And some of us had that. Well, I never had, but some of the boys had a. Well, Gene had one. Your dad's coffee bucket. Of course, he'd bring that from home, but we'd take a tie plate, like over here when we was coming into DeForest from Newcastle. We'd take a tie plate and drop it right inside of the door. Well, then we'd come up into DeForest and we'd cut the engine off and go get coal and water. Well, we'd have a bucket, we'd have it full of coffee and water. We'd fish that out, that their tide plate out, lay it on the deck, set the bucket on that. Well, that was quite hot. Well, it wouldn't be long till your coffee'd boil. That's the way we'd get our coffee. Oh, yeah. Like I said about the caboose, some of them fellas was good. They would, if you was out on the road long, we had several of them that they'd cook up a meal while they'd come over. They'd either fire it or run it, and you'd go back and eat, and then you'd come over and the other fella would go. So
When you say come over, would you stop the train and go back, or?
Well, they would, someplace where we had stopped, they would, the either conductor or the flagman would walk over, see, to the head end. Well, then you would drop off there and catch the cabooses that went by till you got to the next place to stop. Then you would go over and he would drop off.
I've heard about the coffee that they used to have up on the engine. Set it up on the boiler, I think they used to say.
Yeah.
And it would boil there all day.
Yeah, back in the water column on the engine. Boy, I got a full of combustion one night. Oh, you only been here a short time. And he had a quart bottle. And set it up on back of the water column there. And he said to me, long after a while, he said, how about some coffee? And I said, sure. So he gave me the bottle, and boy, boom. I said, who made that? He said, my wife. I said, well, you tell her I'll never be her second husband if she can't make coffee better than that. Boy, I'm telling you, you put about 6 or 7 hours in a jar of coffee sitting back there boiling all the time. It's pretty rank.
Boy, and out. Well, I suppose we better terminate this.
There's a lot of stuff, but then that we can go in now. I wouldn't dare go in there. Time's off and on, not too long.
The butler run.
I fired that with Neeson for a while, and I never fired it when your dad was on it. And who else was on that tonight? Oh, I guess Easley was the only one I fired for there.
Lindsay had it once before.
Yeah.
Well, and old Ed Walkers.
Yeah, well, Walkers, yeah. But, yeah, Easley did have it, or Lindsay had it a while. But I think I fired it all, what I fired was with Easley.
Did you know Vic Parr that ran
oh, yeah.
that butler run? I'll turn this off.
I guess Vic. I guess Vic Parr is the only one living in that outfit that was on the set. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The brakeman, the flagman are all gone.
Sanders was the flagman.
Yeah, yeah.
47. Mm-hmm. On these 4400s, how were they different from the Malleys? Just size?
Oh, they were a smaller engine, a speed engine. They were a fast engine. Both the 4400, now the big sixes that they called them, they were a freight engine, but then they were a heavy engine, not as big as a Malley, but they were a freight engine, but a fast engine. Yeah.
Did they use those 4400s on the road, main line?
Oh yes, yeah, they used all 4400s. They bought the six, the big sixes, and brought them here, and I don't know how long they had them, not too long, and then they took them to the Pittsburgh division. And that was about all we had here on the main line were 4400s. Now and then, of course, the Pittsburgh division, or Butler division, rather, they had 45s over there, 4500s. But the Pittsburgh division, they got the big sixes from Pittsburgh to Connellsville, down around Connellsville there. And occasionally, we would get one here out of Newcastle if they didn't have another, have your own engine to something was wrong with the Malley or with some of these road engines out here.
Well, didn't they need those big sixes down there with sand patch and like that?
Well, they used Malleys down there too, but I think maybe to get rid of the Malleys, that's why they took them big sixes down around Collinsville, down in there, yeah.
Were those 4400s had stokers then?
Oh, yes. Well, the last, yes. They were a rebuilt engine.
What did they rebuild them from?
They was, I think, a 4200. They rebuilt them and put bigger drivers on, I think. And numbered them into the 4400s.
You weren't riding with my father-in-law the night that he, that day that hit that woman over in Niles, were you? Some woman was,
You mean on an engine?
Yeah.
No.
She's picking grape leaves or something up next to the tracks, and he caught her up on the upswing of the what do you call it?
Side rod.
Side rod, yeah. Threw her out into the field.
No.
Just broke her hip, but that was all.
I come into Niles one night in the wintertime with a man by the name of Boyles. We hit a car there on the old crossing down there. That's the only one I ever was with, so I hit there.
Did you have very much trouble with these, with people racing the car?
Yeah. Especially out here, the worst place is out here in Mahoning Avenue, out there at the Copperwood. You see, you come in there diagonally, you know,
yeah.
And they watch you, and they look at the cross, and then they look up at the engine, and then look at the cross to see, well, if you was gaining on the cross, or they were gaining on the cross. That was really the only place you had very much any trouble at all that I found. Mm-hmm. Of course, a lot of them would take chances on the crosses, you know, to get over the head of the bit of the lights, but racing, well, that was the only place I ever saw that.
Yeah, some of those people didn't live too long with their...
Yeah, some of them.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have any arguments down and with any of the yard masters?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them.
What'd you have arguments over?
Oh, heck, that'd be another thing would fit the tub. well, different things that they had done, or different things they claimed that I had done, or something that didn't suit you, you know what I mean? Sure, that was where you had to go to air your gripes, and so what? What else was you going to do? And you wasn't going to give them, leave them have the last word, not if you could help it. So what? Oh, yeah. But all in all, they were Childs and Crawford and Fetzer and, oh, all in all, they weren't too bad of men. Just like I said, they had a job to do, and they were doing it the way they figured it had to be done. And so that was, a lot of them would give the work out, give the conductor the work, and let him go about his business, and let him do it as he seemed fit. And that would be pretty good a thing to do, because a lot of these fellows that they took out of school, and they were just bookmen, you know what I mean, and they had no idea switching cars, and boy, you could put in 8 hours switching one track of cars with some of them folks.
You mean they had some supervisors that had never worked on the railroad?
Oh, sure, towards the later years here, we got a lot of them. Oh, yeah, even your operating officials, all of them. You had operating officials here. We had road foremen here. We had a man here by the name of Steve Ruiz. We had a man here by the name of Jack Weller. We had a fella here, Purcell. He was from Washington, Indiana, I believe, out in there somewhere. A road foreman. They could be in Akron, and you could have an accident over here at DeForester, Youngstown. And he'd call you up and say, what happened? Well, such and such a thing happened. The next day or two, they'd have an investigation. Well, you could go in there. When you went into this investigation, you made up your mind when you went in there to tell him what happened. There was no use lying to him, because he knew what happened without you telling him. These later years, they got these operating officials right out of school and out of books, and they had no idea in the world where they was at on the railroad. Now, they had no idea what happened. Oh, yeah, that was... And here was another thing. When I hired out here, we made We made two round trips on the road. We made a round trip to Willard, a round trip to Painesville, and a day in the yard. Then we had papers and the engineers signed them, and we took them to the clerk, or to the road foreman's office. That was in Newcastle at that time. And the clerk there, she signed them, and she said, "Where do you want to go to work?" "Well, Youngstown." "All right, go over there and mark up." We done all that, that would be, a week for nothing. In later years here, from around 1960, after all, there was nothing to learn. They hired you, you went out and got on the engine, and that was it. "Here, I got a new fireman for you."
They pay him right from the beginning?
They paid him right from the beginning. Yeah. Oh yeah, we made student trips. Shut that thing off.
Okay.